Radio Reverb.
Making music night and day.
97.2 FM.
Keep safe and get around Brighton and Hove with Streamline 2020. Proud supporter of Radio Reverb. Saturday, March 3rd, the sound of your city presents Reverbathon 2018, our annual fundraiser. Donate to Radio Reverb. Reverbathon 2018. All your favourite Radio Reverb presenters live from Brighton's open market. Saturday, March 3rd from 7 a.m. Get all the details and donate now at radioreverb.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, which you can find on Spotify. Now, I'm Ailey Packham, and we are hurtling face first on a tea tray towards you, thanks to oldfootballshirts.com. Well, last Saturday's win over Coventry sees us in the FA Cup quarter-finals for the first time since 1986, where we will face our 1983 Cup final opponents, Manchester United, at Old Trafford. But Cup fever will have to wait, as we have three massive points at stake today against an improving Swansea side under the guidance of former massive boss Carlos Carvajal. It's also a game that sees the pantomime villain of English football make his first appearance at the Amex. We all know who that is. I'm not even going to give his name. Anyway, joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back a man who, despite the fact that he's a Swansea City supporter, there will always be a welcome in the downside and a welcome in the stands for former chief engineer of the Amex Build Project, Norman Natterjack Thomas. And we're also delighted to welcome back Fat Albion fan extraordinaire, Nigel Summers. Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, good morning.
Hello.
Norman, how's it feel to be back in Brighton?
It's fantastic. It's been 6 long years since I was in Brighton last, and I've been looking forward to this tea.
Was it for that Spurs game, for the very first game?
I came, another game, I can't remember, was against, after that, I think I've been 3 times since the stadium's opened.
Was that all in the first season?
That was all in the first season.
So you haven't seen the stadium completed yet?
I haven't been there since the corners and the
And the extra stand.
Did you say, I'm not coming back until Brighton are playing Swansea in the Premier League?
Yeah.
Well, at least you made good on your promise then. But and also, it's very confident that you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
So, no. But welcome back, mate. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Yeah.
I mean, the last time, it's not the first time on the show either. I mean, the last time you were here was, it's a show that's actually still in our archive, and people do still keep talking about
it, which was
the breakfast show we did on the opening day of the Spurs game.
Yeah.
And Norman was there in his Swansea shirt.
Yes, I don't fit anymore.
No, I think it was a fantastic time, and I think that the people first got introduced to you when you logged into North Stand chat and said, because I think it was, I mean, we have to rewind about 10 years here.
Yeah.
And Brighton were drawn against Swansea in the League Cup or whatever the League Cup was called in those days, and they said, you know, Swansea fan here in peace, you know, always say that in peace, you know, no in pieces by the time you finish. Swansea fan in peace, you know, we've been drawn in the FA Cup against, in the League Cup against Swansea, just wanted to know what you guys felt about it. By the way, I'm the chief engineer on the stadium, and not one person came back to me and said anything about the game. They bombarded you, didn't they?
I was inundated, yeah, which was a bit of a shock, but
I suppose you weren't actually familiar with the whole thing of now the stadium's being built.
Yeah.
You know, there's people excited about it.
Well, it was, of course, with everything at Brighton that had gone through, which I wasn't versed up with at the time, and I remembered when Swansea built their stadium, it was a case of they put the shutters up around the stadium and nobody ever took pictures, maybe the odd picture in the local paper and every few months, and there was a big thirst for knowledge, and So the people, obviously, it was just up another three levels when I came to Brighton. There's so much people asking what, you know, what's happening here, what's happening there, you know.
There was a massive thirst for knowledge, and it was amazing. I mean, were you surprised by the groundswell of enthusiasm for the nuances of a building project?
Until I had a bit of a background of things that Brighton had gone through, Gillingham, and you know,
with Dean and
all that nonsense. But speaking to fans then and getting in more in depth, you realise then the magnitude of everything and why the stadium and the planning issues and everything else you had ongoing over how many years was it? 15 years,
something like that. It was
it takes you back then and a lot of people are not up with it, you know. So it was a bit of a shock.
Yeah. So yeah, you kind of got bombarded to the point that actually people were asking you questions on North Stand chat, and you were answering them. And at which point, I think Richard Hebbard, who was the ground safety officer at the time, then said, "Hang on, I think we need to slam the brakes on here because if there's questions to be asked, I think we you were kind of the go-to person at the time, weren't you?
Because I was just involved in a small part of it, substructure work, which, you know, is interesting as far as I'm concerned.
I was about to say, which bit did you build?
Yeah, but part of my work was going around record keeping, taking pictures, you know, and putting them all in files. So it was easy for me. I'd go around the stadium, take a load of pictures, come in for a cup of tea, and they'd just whap it straight on online, you know, anything interesting. It was like not a live feed, but.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of, here's some footings. Here's a trench being dug.
You were in the East Stand. I think that was the first one they put up. There's a picture of you in the East Stand.
Well, we're going to come back and talk about the likes of dog heads and chasing girders down motorways shortly, and also
and Graham leaping over the boards.
And we will also hear from a link between Brighton and Swansea with Andrea Orlandi, who I caught up earlier this week as well. But first, let's talk about last Saturday. It was Cup Fever at the Amex. And in case anyone was wondering, yes, I did take a fall FA Cup. I now has the proof.
Yes, I do. He also took his daughter. And I think you had a nice time. Nigel, did you have a nice time?
I did. I sat in the sunshine and because I sat on the East Terrace for the
where are you normally?
The East Terrace,
the chicken run.
Do you know, I hadn't even thought about that. I just can't get into this modern newfangled way of things, can I?
The same stand where you sit.
Yes, exactly. Well, so, I'm normally at the West End upper where you boys, but it was very right down the front of the East, and it was good. Sun went down, and then we could see.
Absolutely. I was about to say, it's when the sun's that low on you on the East Stand, I mean, you know, it's sunglasses. You all look cool, don't get me wrong, but, you know, then you've got the sort of the hand over the...
Baseball capsy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I actually sat there due for a pre-season friendly, the one against Sevilla. Was it Sevilla? A few years ago. I just burnt. Absolutely burnt in that sun.
The only other time I've been there was for Barnet. Did we play Barnet this year?
Oh, with the League Cup,
And the floodlights were so blinding into your eye.
They were.
So much so that, you know, I thought it was a strange view, but I wonder how the players are looking up, because they are so bright, those
you
lights.
Do so much so you're going to say tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be.
Well, you see, actually, there are times when you've got one of the big booming crossfield balls. I've seen Bruno doing it a couple of times. I've seen a couple of others doing it. They put their hands up as if to shield the light because the ball is coming straight out of the lights.
Yeah, I'd have a word with the chief engineer.
I was about to say it's a major design flaw of the stadium. Right, knock it down, start again. I'm going to have a good
new light since he was there.
The number of new things in that stadium that Norm's got to look forward
improvements.
To. Improvements.
Okay,
absolutely.
So the game he didn't do before.
I know, it's terrible. Sorry, carry on.
The game itself, then, there was 9 changes to the Albion team with only Dale Stevens and Solly Marks surviving from the game against Stoke. Stevens is now the only player to have started every game.
What a guy. I told you. But no one listened to me, but I told you.
But I mean, the atmosphere in the stadium, it just seemed to be a lot more relaxed. There wasn't that tension.
Listen, it was a game that was basically a free hit. You think, okay, if we win, we're in the quarterfinals, it's exciting. We expected to win because Coventry are brackets only fourth division. But they think, well, if we do lose, it's not such a big sort of FA Cup shock than if we lost to, say, Accrington Stanley, because you always associate Coventry as being one of the bigger sides. But also, you're back to your old cliche of concentrating on the league. So this was kind of a free hit. But also, it was a good chance to blood some new players. I mean, Lacadia Lockadia was playing. Hashtag take your pick.
And Lockadia. Here I go again. My scoring goals for Brighton.
I promised not to sing.
I did promise, actually. What I was going to do last night, I was going to put a tweet up saying, look, how is it? Because if it's Lockadia, Aidy's going to put Mamma Mia into my head, which means that I'm going to put something into Aidy's head.
It won't work well. I'll go in one ear and out the other with me, you know that.
I know. I've noticed. It's big hollows. Anyway, and a chance to see Ujoa and Lacadia, Lockadia playing together to see if that was ever going to work without Gross. With Bruno and so on and so forth. So in that sense, you know, a few more things were learnt. We've got to the quarterfinal of the FA Cup. It's quite exciting. And yeah, and Coventry made a big day of it as well. 4,500 fans they took down, for the most part well behaved, apart from some homophobic shouting in the lanes. And it was the first FA Cup game, a proper FA Cup game of the season for us. Sun was shining and a near full house, and it was just good.
You say it's the first proper FA Cup. We actually played Crystal Palace earlier in the competition and beat them.
And yeah, we went to Middlesbrough.
Yeah, I know, but my point is, Palace was rubbish because it was a half full stadium, half empty, depends on which way you look at it. 6 weeks after that nonsense, it was a Monday night, it was freezing cold, Borough away, how exciting was it? Not. So, you know, it was our first. What I mean is, when I say it's the chance for the Brighton fans to see their first proper FA Cup game, because if the Palace game was on the Saturday, there may be, but you know, this was a proper.
Actually, I'm just going to rewind here. I'm going to bring in Norman on this one as well, actually, because the FA Cup draw this year, there seems to be an element of farce about every round so far.
Yeah, yeah.
Not quite as much as it is for the League Cup, but yeah. I mean, against for the Palace game, the draw was just before it, and it's like have a look and see what you could have won. Oh, you could go on away from Middlesbrough. Oh, what a plum tie.
Yeah.
And then the cup draw for the quarterfinals happened on the Saturday night before all the other games. Now, that's not right, is it?
Strange, yeah, it is. It's, I don't think they should do it like they've always done it after all the games are played. You know, then do a.
And play all the games on Saturday.
Play all the games on Saturday.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being crowded around a transistor radio at school listening to the cup draw on a Monday lunchtime.
Yeah, three sort of knackered old, sort of austere people who were, you know, frankly grave dodgers. But, you know, the velvet bag, it wasn't your plastic sort of bingo drum. It was a velvet bag. You could hear the clink clink of the balls. You know, and it was all done so sort of conservatively. Number 8, Coventry City.
Do you not enjoy the one show?
No, funny enough. Does it show?
What a shambles that was, wasn't it?
It was an absolute... But the thing is, also, the what they do is they say, number 8, Coventry City, who are managed by Mark Robbins, who won the FA Cup with you. No, just say the name of the club. You don't have to we know who Coventry City are. Yeah. We know who Swansea City are. You know, you don't... Just...
No.
I've finished. I haven't finished. Carry on.
Yeah. Okay, well, in the absence of Pascal Gross, Marcus Suttner was on set-piece duty, and he swings in a dangerous corner, which is headed goalwards by Goldson, but deflected over. Suttner takes the resulting corner from the left, which is headed into the path of Lacadia, who hits the post.
How careless is that?
He looked dangerous from a corner. That's that was the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, I thought he looked good. You know, that's exactly what... we've needed for two transfer windows, and I hope he plays today.
I was about to say, in that case, I mean, we'll come back to the cup game in a minute. Do you actually see him being, if Houghton is going to keep the same formation of having a lead striker and someone, you know, a playmaker just behind him, do you see Lacadia as the role, fulfilling the role that Murray and Hemed have been playing?
I think once he's proved to be fit, because he's had this long layoff with a hamstring,
it's only a couple of weeks he's had,
I thought he'd been off for weeks and weeks.
It was beginning of December. So.
Oh, was it? Okay.
All right. So once he's fully fit, I think that a young guy... But how can you drop Murray? Murray is... He plays, he scores.
Well, I mean, unless Chris Hughton's had a major personality change overnight, which is we all know is not going to happen, Murray will start because he always keeps
his
shirt.
You can't.
But it's just
that.
A case
right.
of whether Lacadia will get in the side as well. In which case, you probably have to drop Pascal Gross, and then how do you?
It would be interesting to see that the fact that we've actually now got options, because going forwards we didn't have options before. We had, you know, the creaking bones of Hemed, the creaking bones of Murray, Pascal Gross, and if they were on fire, one of Knockhart, March or Izquierdo, and you know, Izquierdo is been doing well lately. March has been misfiring, although did well against Coventry. Knockhart is actually, well, we can talk about him later, but, you know, he's really flattering to deceive at the moment. So, you know, the point is there are options.
Well, with Knockhart, he's due a good game. He's due to come back into form at some point, and you know, it will happen for him. I'm still convinced.
He's a great defensive header of a ball, though.
Yeah, for sure. But okay, there was Jonathan Clark Harris, who the Coventry
he
player.
Did
he
well.
Was a menace for Coventry all afternoon. And after we hit the post, he thought anything you can do, we can do better. And he hit the woodwork from.
Well, so he did the same, not better.
From yeah, exactly. From a Coventry corner. And then shortly
Sorry,
after
hang
that,
on, I just sort of cut in there. Once again, I mean, it was very, very close, but once again, we failed to defend a corner adequately. It was the post that saved, or the bar that saved us. Mm. But once again, even against the 4th Division side, we weren't defending a corner properly.
Yeah. Shortly after that, Lucardia did open his Albion account, and that was turning in Knockhart's low cross.
Was it a decent cross or was it a shanked cross, Nige?
I thought he picked him out. I thought he went for him. I don't think it was a miss hit, but. You know, I heard people say, but it's only against the Coventry defence. But when I looked at it again, he made the space and he tucked it away, and he could have done that against any defence. I thought it was really good.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's not as though the Coventry defence. I mean, it's one of those cute little things. I mean, we spoke to Coventry fans afterwards, and they could see a sort of a certain golfing class. But, you know, Coventry could have come and packed the defence. And even when they did defend quite deep, you know, yeah, Lacadia, he actually sort of managed to find the space and stick it in the corner.
I
don't know which one it is. The thing is, we haven't had it confirmed.
The thing is, when you say it like that, it sounds like you're singing the Macarena, and please don't do that.
Okay, well, it's better than Mamma Mia. Well, the thing is that the commentator was calling him Lockadia.
Are you saying Macarena's a better song than Mamma Mia?
Oh, there's different. There's. The, oh.
Have you got both? Field. You can queue up and we're ready.
No, please don't. No. Total silences, but I prefer 4:33 by John Cage. No, the commentator was calling him Rockadia. You're calling him Lacardia, mm-hmm. Although you want to call him Rockadia because it rhymes with Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we haven't had it, you know.
We need to confirm. When Knockhart came, there was a big thing about let's actually ask him how we pronounce it.
Well, actually, someone did actually reply, look, just forget it. Let's call him Knockers and Lockers.
French Tony. Yeah.
But well, okay. No. It's French Tony and Dutch George. There you go.
Krull comes out for a cross and he gets Polax. He recovers enough to finish the half, but Nicky Mempar gets a rare run out in the second half.
Do you think that was deliberate?
No, it wasn't. No,
you reckon?
No, Krull would have finished the game. He got a little bit of concussion, I think.
Whiplash, I read.
Was it whiplash? Yeah,
but
he got clattered anyway.
Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, Claxon, please. We scored a goal from a corner.
Go on, Nigel. I'll let you do the honours of describing this.
Well. We've been worrying about not defending from corners. I've been saying for a long time, if we could watch the other teams, how they score against us, perhaps we should try that at the other end. But, I mean...
Silly idea.
It's great to see him score, isn't it? Absolutely.
Well, and especially as it was on the anniversary of his heart problems. So,
It's quite a big thing about that on all sorts of the radio, like it was his anniversary of having the operation. So yeah,
I'm suspecting that his girlfriend might be pregnant as well, judging by the.
It was the words he used afterwards. That was for my pregnant girlfriend.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the point. No, the point is,
it wasn't just keeping the ball warm. Then that's
it was
right
a fairly similar. I mean, it's not as though our defenders don't win the headers in the area. It's just that when they do, they go sailing to the back of the stand. Yeah. They're not directing. I mean, Shane Duffy can do it for his country, but he just won't do it for us.
Well, I mean, the point with this is that Conor Goldson becomes our first defender to score this season, and that speaks volumes, really, doesn't
it? It's not good form, is it? But having said that, I thought Conor Goldson was absolutely excellent. Nigel?
He's absolutely great all the time. I mean, when we were talking in January about who we're going to buy, everybody really is also worrying about if we're going to have a bid for one of our central defenders. Had we had a bid from one of them, we got a ready-made replacement to slot in.
Well, he was actually all bar the shouting was ready to go on loan to Ipswich. So, which would have been Ipswich's game, but certainly would have been our loss.
I've been saying for a long time that I would prefer to see him in the side ahead of Duffy. But it was.
Well, it depends on who you've got in the other side. If you're in Stoke or something like that, you can understand Duffy playing. But I mean, we've got Tammy Abraham playing this afternoon. You know.
But what about when we played the three of them? Was it against Chelsea?
That worked. It was Shane Duffy that got under everyone's feet, wasn't it?
If you're going to play three at the back, you play Hunemeyer. And Goldson, Duncan, Hunemeyer, basically.
Yeah, no,
absolutely. This is no slight on Shane Duffy, by the way. I do love Shane Duffy, but I mean, he had away a Fiat 500. But, I mean, it's...
I understand the point, and I don't disagree, actually. If you're going to play a back three, then Duffy's the one you drop, unless you're playing against a team of giants. Coventry weren't that, and, well, you could see that Goldson sort of, you know, he coped very, very well, and, you know, the fact that he capped his appearance with a goal, and a very good one as well. I mean, just let the ball hit it and guide it into him, into the net. He didn't try and power it, he didn't try and, you know, Keegan it. You know, it just guided it in, and it was just beautifully done. Okay. Keeper had no chance.
One player we haven't mentioned so far is Leo Ajer, who also started the game, and he was linking up really well with Jürgen.
Yeah, well, if you say about Goldson guiding that header in, he absolutely volleyed that in with his head.
He did, didn't he?
It was impressive, that.
Yeah. It was the old kind of yoosh. Yeah. Neck muscles. I was actually going to demonstrate that on radio, but
how did I describe it? March crosses from the left, but there's nobody there. Knockout keeps it alive and lays off to Bruno, who puts it on a plate for Ajoa to power a header home.
Norman, I bet you feel like you're almost there.
The only thing I can say about Ajoa is he always scores against Swansea.
Right, excellent. So thanks for
he's
that.
He's not playing, is he?
He always scores. It was
3-0. It was relatively comfortable. I mean, he did have chances to
make it 3. It would make it 4. Baldock hit the bar. Knockout missed the sitter, and it was a sitter. He'd had it laid on a plate for him.
Yeah, but Coventry did pull one back, and it was that Johnson Clark Harris again, and he hit the post again.
He did very well.
He's got a bright future ahead of him, I think.
I think so, and it's not a Coventry.
No. Well, this is.
Is he actually a Coventry player? Is he on loan?
I believe he is a Coventry player, but I mean, this is the sad indictment of Coventry at the moment is that they are.
Screwed.
They've not finished in the top six of any division for 47 years, which is just an amazing stat. But
we were talking to them in the pub, some of the Coventry fans in the pub afterwards, about 1997 to now. Where were they in 97 and we were in 97?
Yeah, yeah.
And we've swapped divisions.
Yep.
We're in, you know, a big new stadium and loving it.
So what,
and they've gone to the other end. And
what do they make of what we've done then? I mean, because obviously...
Well, they regard the ones we were talking to as... You know, it's not hopeless. They can get back. Because if we can get back from where we got back from, they can certainly
get back.
Kind
of a model for their resistance.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, they need to sort the ground problem out first.
Yeah,
and they need a knight in shining armour to come along and help.
Well, I think they've got
it
is a total shambles. And it's run by, what do they call it, a capitalist hedge fund, whatever they call them, futures investment. Yeah. Mm. And, you know, they're overvaluing the ground, and it's all a big sort of nonsensical farce. And, you know, like with us, we've got a 125-year lease on our ground. They've got a one-year lease. I mean, how can they actually plan for the future? It's ridiculous. Yeah. And this is a decent, aged-old, cherished club that spent 30-odd years in the top division,
yeah,
you know, pillar of the community, that kind of thing.
And let's face it, they've had some of the most iconic kits of all time.
Well, they have, actually, yeah. Brown.
Well, that one was great. I like that. But the Talbot kit as well, with the Talbot logo, that was cunning. That's how you get away on the advertising thing.
Is this going to segue into another part of the show, Odie?
I was hoping it was.
How did you guess? You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on our podcast, and of course on DAB. And we are brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. How many shirts are there on there?
That was at least 84,000. Do you listen to the podcast?
But it's
I can see the worry lines.
Oldfootballshirts.com, and there's loads of Swansea shirts on there as well.
It's basically a huge online gallery. So many people across the world put their own pictures of the football shirt up on there, and you can go and view that. If you're an anorak about shirts, then go and have a look.
It's very hard to mess up a white shirt, really, isn't it?
Oh, we've had some frightening shirts over the years.
Go on.
What was the iconic Swansea shirt? We had a
red, black and yellow combo with action written across it once. Was a total abomination.
Right.
So is that a second kit, or do they always play in white for a first kit?
We always played in white, but they've mixed the colours. Generally, it should be just white.
See, the most iconic one for Swansea for me is kind of the early 80s, John Toshack and Alan Curtis, I think it was Leighton James.
James,
plain white, the Swan badge in the middle. We beat Leeds 5-1 on the opening day of the season, that kind of thing. And...
He's welling up. He's welling up.
Yeah. Was that the Lecoq shirt?
It was a Partick.
Patrick, yes.
Right. Okay, well, here's your shirt of the week.
Okay, Nige, describe that for us. Shirt of the week.
Well, first of all, the sponsor, I thought it said Southwicks. Of course, it doesn't. So it's a green shirt with a red and blue
kind of vertical stripe down one side.
I think it's red and black, actually.
Is it your printer? Okay.
And a bit of that in one sleeve. So, and it's a Coq Sportif brand.
Yeah, has Phil photoshopped out the badge, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I can see a bit of badge. I have to do this looking over the top of my
glasses. I'm going to have to do the same as well. Yeah, he's photoshopped it out. It looks like there's a swan on there or some kind of bird on. Is it not a swan or is it
a chicken?
And is it an albatross or a
chicken? It's a chicken albatross swan cross.
Chicken. Hang on, if it's a chicken, it's not this fabled New Haven Town thing that Warren Dudley and Tim Herbert did, is it? Okay, I don't know who or what Smithwicks are or
Smithwicks
or whatever they are.
Is it Smithwicks?
I believe at least, though, yeah.
Well, let's not argue with that.
No,
not of all people.
About to.
We have absolutely no idea. Okay, I wouldn't even dare to guess.
I'm going to go Northern Premier League.
Northern something. You were very close. When me and Phil were talking about Shirt of the Week this week, he did threaten to do a Cardiff shirt, but then that would just...
We want to keep the studio in one piece.
But Phil says this is your Shirt of the Week for today. This is the 1998-1999 home shirt of Northern Irish Premiership side Glentoran, who play their home games at the Oval in Belfast. The stadium has an official capacity in excess of 26,000, but problems with health and safety means that the crowds are currently curtailed at 6,050. The side was formed in 1882 and are unimaginatively nicknamed the Glens. They are currently managed by Northern Ireland football legend Ronnie McFall. He was the most notably manager of the hometown club Portadown for 29 years until he resigned in 2016. To date, he was the longest serving manager in any European club football side, actually, eclipsing Sir Alex Ferguson when he retired in 2013. And Billy Bingham was the legendary Sunderland and Everton winger for the 50s and 60s, made 60 appearances before them before moving to England. Danny Blanchflower began his career there in 1946. He moved to England and made his name playing 350 times for Spurs. He once said, "The game is not about winning, it's about the glory. It's about doing things in style and with a flourish and just going out there and beating the lot, not waiting for them to die of boredom."
He also said, "I think the best way of approaching football is equalise before the other team scores."
Yeah. More recently, Keith Gillespie began his life as a footballer in Belfast. I guess nowadays the talent is spotted by scouts from England long before the youngsters in Northern Ireland and Ireland get to turn out for the local sides. Random one for you. Derek Acora, the celebrity spiritual medium, who was he was once on the books of Liverpool under Bill Shankly. He turned out for the side in the 60s. There you go. And also supported by a friend of mine, Ricky Warwick.
That is the worst piece of name dropping ever. It's a D-list pop star.
Currently in Black Star Riders and Thin Lizzy. And
What form of Thin Lizzy is that then? I mean, anything that hasn't got Phil Lynott in it is going to be sort of only ever a tribute band, isn't it?
It's Scott Gorham and Brian Powney. Not Brian
Downey.
Downey.
Oh, sorry, Brian Powney.
Something completely
Scott,
different.
Yeah.
But they run out to a Ricky Warwick song. So there you go. Right. Arms of Belfast.
Make a note of that.
Okay, yeah.
In case I can use that in the pub later.
Yeah, I know. I might put it in the Renf quiz.
Right, and Phil did say, and of course someone will probably point out, that Jurgen Lacardia, Leon Knight and Dirk Lehman all pulled on the Glentoran shirt at some stage. Thanks, Phil. So that's your shirt.
No. What, shirt swap?
Yeah. So that's your shirt of the week.
Thanks, Phil.
For this week. Now, before we move on, Al, we just do need to point out to you that next week is the Reverbathon. And here's our Al with a quick reminder of what that is.
We want your money. Next. Radio Reverb is a community radio station. We do not survive on advertising. We have to survive on sponsorship donations and grants. And so we're asking you for the middle one of those. We have licences, rent rates and everything to pay for. But not funnily enough, any of the staff. We're all done on a voluntary basis. In order to keep this brilliant radio station on air, we're asking you to donate during the show next week. We'll give you more details through the week, but... if you go to radioreverb.com and hit the donate button, you can do it any time, frankly, but if you do that during the show, then we'll love you all the more. So yes, the Reverbathon next, that's 12 hours of live radio from 7 till 7 next Saturday, the 3rd of March.
And it's also rent season is fast upon us.
Yes, it is. It's Thursday the 29th of March is the 8th annual rent quiz night, where everyone gets together in the Heineken Lounge and has a big fight, usually on the back of the fact I might have actually offered a wrong answer. But do come along. It's teams of up to six. It's £5 per person. Pay on the night. Just email me, alan.wares@ntlworld.com, just to let me know you're coming. The bar will be open. Pies and pints are all on sale. There'll be a raffle there too, which reminds me I actually better go begging for some raffle prizes soon. If anyone wants any particular heads up as to what they might like to buy, and let's face it, Kate and Phil will always win a prize anyway, because they always do. Yeah, come along. It's a good fun night. You actually might learn something, or you might actually just beat me up. So do come along. That's Thursday the 29th of March in the Heineken Lounge, the 8th annual Remph Quiz. Are you coming, Nigel?
We always come, and we always do the worst on the Albion round.
Everyone, to be fair, everyone does. Yeah.
It doesn't make me feel a lot better.
No, I do it deliberately to make them as obscure as possible. I mean, it's just to test your, you know, your faith.
Yeah, we had two teams of six last year, but this year it'll be just one, I think. My daughter's decided to move to Leeds. Can you imagine that?
Why? Oh, God.
Well,
university.
Did she design the badge?
She's working on it.
That's
funny, isn't it?
That's
pitiful, isn't it?
We will be there at the quiz.
Okay. Now, there are a few links between Brighton and Swansea over the years, but one of them, and possibly one of the more recent ones and most loved ones, is that of Andrea Orlandi, who I caught up with earlier this week. Now, sound quality isn't brilliant, so you might need to adjust your quality. And I mean, I was on a speakerphone and he was in an airport terminal, but this is Andrea Orlandi, and he was lovely.
There's another game tomorrow. Two of your old teams going head to head. You must have dreamt about that when you were here.
I know. You know, when I was at Brighton, I was really keen to get to the Premier League and have the chance to play against Swansea. That unfortunately didn't happen, but you know, it's always nice to see two clubs where I felt really, really good, you know, going ahead in a club like this in the Premier. Fantastic.
Yeah. So, how is it you came to come to Swansea?
It was actually quite easy because Roberto Martinez was the coach at the time, a Spanish coach. He watched me play Barcelona first team at a cup game, and he called me straight away and he invited me to see Swansea, the facility, the stadium. And then as soon as I got released by Alaves, I got the chance to sign, and I signed for Swansea. Initially for 3 years, but I eventually played for 5 years, and we managed to get into the Premier League, and it was a nice journey.
Yeah, and I mean, that was in 2007 you joined there, and your last game was actually a 4-4 draw, I saw, which you scored in. But I mean, you also scored famously from a corner for the Swans.
I scored in a Welsh derby straight from the corner, and then my last game was against Wolverhampton. I scored the fastest goal in the Premier League on that season after 24 seconds, which was nice. And I was unfortunate at Swansea because I got hit by many injuries at the wrong times, you know, when I was in the team, and I couldn't I couldn't break through in the team as I would have liked to do, but. But I had a great time. It was 5 years there. I think it was really good friend there. It's nice to think back and to see where I managed to do that.
Now, when you were at Swansea, I believe you had a visitor, which may or may not have had something to do with you coming to Brighton.
Yes. Inigo Calderón, the Brighton legend. Yes, he came to visit when he got released by Alaves as well. So he came to Swansea, he stayed at home for a couple of months where he was looking for a team. And at the time, he got a phone call from Gaspar Yet to join Brighton. He was over the moon, and I was over the moon for him as well. And obviously, when Gas called me to come to Brighton and join Brighton, we were the happiest men in the world because we're really good friends and we still speak every day.
Yeah, so I've seen it. But I mean, it wasn't just cool day at the Albion at the time. There's quite a big Spanish contingent.
No, we were a real family because we got on really well together because I had the same at Swansea. but you know, we were like seven of us, and it wasn't as nice as a Brighton, because it was me, David Lopez, Vicente, Bruno, Leo Ulloa. We have to get in there, even if he's Argentinian. Usually Calde, and we had a great relationship. We were always together after training, and it was fantastic. Our sons are still friends, and our wives the same. So it was. I had a great time at Brighton. Unfortunately, it was only for 2 years. I would have liked to, you know, to make it last more, but unfortunately, I couldn't.
What are your memories of playing for Brighton?
Well, I think the first season was fantastic, but we were lucky not to get into the Premier League. I think we were probably the best footballing side in the Championship, and we all remember what happened against Palace, in the second
round. We don't remember at all. We've forgotten.
Yeah, we forgot it. Yeah, well, I still remember it because it's one of the biggest regrets I got, you know, because I think we were much better than them, and we should have won that game and got to Wembley and win the playoffs. Mm. And because you see Palace from then, they've been in the Premier League since. And Brighton only managed to get up last season, which is a shame. And obviously the second season I got injured, you know, I done my knee after the first game, and it was harder for me to get fit, but still, you know, we managed to get into the playoffs, and again, we were unfortunate not as well. But, you know, for me, were the best 2 years I've had in England by far. I felt great at Brighton with my teammates, with the fans. My daughter was born there, and, you know, I'm always grateful to Brighton and Hove Albion both. Because what I felt on at the Amex with the fans and, you know, and being able to wear that shirt was fantastic.
Now, on the show this week, we've got a Swansea City fan who was the chief engineer when the stadium was being built. And a lot of talk is made of what the best goals in the MX era have been. And one of yours often comes up, which was an absolute beauty against Blackpool when we won 6-1.
Ah, yeah, I remember that one. I remember that goal. It was really, really, really nice because David Lopez, you know, made the sneak with this back heel, which made it even nicer. And, you know, and I scored with the outside of my foot. Yeah, it was a fantastic goal and a fantastic game. We won 6-1 that day.
Scored all goals. And,
yeah. We scored all goals. Yeah, yeah. I think Neil Hammond now scored.
Yeah, a brilliant own goal in that game.
So we actually scored 7. Yeah, yeah.
Another one of yours that comes up a lot is your goal against Newcastle in the FA Cup.
Yes. But you know what? I'll tell you something. When I'm a bit down, I always go to on YouTube and I look at my Brighton goals, and that cheers me up, you know, because they were nice goals, you know, scored at the Amex in a nice moment for me when my wife was pregnant. We were expecting our second daughter. And everything was going well. So when I want to lift myself up, I look at YouTube and there Landy Brighton goals, and that always lifts me up.
Always cheers up us as well. Unfortunately, time came for you to leave, and you ended up in a complete basket case of a club at Blackpool.
No, but the moment was depressing. It was a shame because Blackpool has really nice fans. They were they deserve a lot more than what they're getting. And, you know, I decided to go. I didn't want to go at first. I had a meeting with the manager, but I wasn't convinced. But then I thought, let's take a gamble. You know, I didn't want to wait anymore for a team to come. So I went there, and, you know, from the first game, I understood that I made the wrong decision. But I still managed to play games under two managers, very different managers. I had Lee Clark, which is very British, 4-4-2 sort of football. And I thought that maybe that would have helped me to get a new team, but that wasn't the case. I had some talks with Bolton after the season, and then I decided to change completely, like go to Cyprus and get some sun.
I mean, did you see that as a step backwards? I mean, you're back in, you're in Serie B, now.
Yes, of course, from a football point of view, yeah, it was a step backwards. But, you know, they made me a good offer from a club where they wanted to win the league and they were selling me this story. But I wasn't happy in Cyprus, like, from a football point of view, because I'm very competitive and I wanted to play in a higher level, you know, football. The only good thing about it is that I managed to sign for Apoel, which were the champions. and I played in the Champions League qualifying rounds. I played in Europa League, had some good games, and that was nice, you know. But when I had the offer from Novara to come to Italy in the Italian Championship, you know, I didn't think it twice, and I was looking for, you know, I was desperate to come here because I wanted to leave from Cyprus.
Now, I mean, the position you're playing now, I believe it's a little bit different to what we're used to seeing from you.
Yeah, it's a lot different. I'm playing in front of the defense now. I'm like a holding midfielder.
Like Liam Brooks.
Believe it or not. yeah, like Liam, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But in a different kind of way, you know. I'm trying to build that play from the back. Maybe we don't have as much quality as we had at Brighton at the time, you know, as defenders. So I need to help them to get the ball up to our strikers. And I'm quite enjoying it. You know, it's a bit boring sometimes because in Italy the tactics are crazy. So I need to stay in my position. They don't let me go up a lot, but you know, I still manage to make some good passes, and I still enjoy playing football. You know, I'm gonna be 34 in August, but I still think that I can play for a few more years.
And finally, what have you made of Brighton in the Premier League?
Well, I think they started well, you know. Well, obviously with some problems, but you know, Chris Hughton got it right. Got the right men playing now. I think they got the points, you know, under the belt that they need to stay up. And you know, they're getting good results now with Leo coming back. Hopefully, you know, in good form and start scoring goals. You know, it's going to add more competition, you know, in the for the strikers. They've got some really good strikers, you know, Glenn Murray, obviously Leo, Thomas Hemed, Sam Boldo, you know, they've got, you know, different options. And I think they're not going to struggle to stay in the Prem.
And Jurgen Lacardia as well. I mean, he's released a single. I mean, did you ever think about going into the recording studio?
Say again, sorry.
Jurgen Lacardia as well, who's a pop star back in Holland. He's released a single. I mean, did you ever think about going into a recording studio?
Who's that? Say again.
The new striker, Jurgen Lacardia.
Ah, yeah? Really? I didn't know that.
He likes house music.
Okay, interesting. But Dutch players are interesting, you know. I've met many Dutch interesting players.
When are we going to see you back in Brighton at some point?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping to come back soon. You know, obviously, with my schedule, you know, I'm still playing, so I don't have many spare time to come. But you know, I would love to go to Brighton to watch a game, you know, live at the Amex. Like Inigo Calderón did last year when Albion got promoted. I was very jealous.
Yeah, he was with us when the final whistle went in the game when we went up. So it was a bit of a party.
Yeah, it was fantastic. He said that. And you know, maybe I'm gonna speak with him and try to organise something and come up to Brighton because I would love to do so.
Yeah, and when you do, we'd love to have you in the studio, Andrea.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you soon. Good luck tomorrow. And well, we won't ask you to make a prediction in the Brighton Swansea game, but Brighton are clearly going to win, right?
No, we're not doing that. I only hope it'll be a good football game. That's all I can say.
That was Andrea Orlandi, who I caught up with in an airport terminal yesterday, which was interesting.
What did you you delayed him, didn't you?
Well, I got a message back from him afterwards saying that while I was talking to you, my flight got called and I nearly missed the flight.
But, it was a bit careless of, well, the pair of you, frankly, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. He's lovely, though.
You're very professional.
And, you know, I mean, it's like, I just like the fact that he said, when I'm feeling a little bit down, I go back and watch my Brighton goals on YouTube.
Well, but, I think we could all feel that.
He used to play for Swansea as well. What are your memories of Andrea?
Andrea Landy was a naturally gifted footballer. We had the best out of him, I think, 5 or 6 seasons.
In the Championship, wasn't it?
In the Championship, in League One. When he played in a number 10 role, that's where his talent. I remember he played against Wolves once and he tore him to pieces on his own. He scored.
That wasn't the 4-4 game, was it?
It was actually. It was 4-4. Yeah, he scored the first one.
He scored in that goal. That was his last game.
Yeah, that's right. And Yeah, Andrew Orlandi actually scored a great goal straight from a corner against Cardiff, which was great. That was for Swansea.
Well, that's always going to endear him.
Yeah, and he scored a lovely goal when I watched him in Cardiff, Brighton in Cardiff. For the Seagulls,
what happened then? I mean, he scored, and what? Yeah. Obviously, you're cheering any goal against Cardiff.
Yeah, yeah, I was jumping around more than the Brighton fans were.
So, I mean, do you think the Swansea fans would actually look on him, sort of, you know, back on him fondly?
He was unlucky, actually. He was unlucky with injuries, and then when he did come back, I think Roberto Martinez left. I'm sure it was Paulo Sousa was in charge at the time. When he came back from injury, he tried playing him out wide, which didn't really work out. In the system we were playing, and you know, as generally happens when your face don't fit, you end up going off. It was a shame because he was a very talented footballer. I watched him a few times for Brighton, you know, and he done well for you.
So he was appreciated down there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he played. I've got the stats here. He for Swansea, he played 72 times. This is
in the
this
league,
is Wikipedia,
yeah.
So it's not including
it's in
numbers,
the league. Yeah.
Scoring only 3 goals for you, actually. Only played 49 games for us, but he scored 6 goals for us. So,
no, good for him. No,
but I mean, I was looking at his showreel this morning, and he was such a cultured player. I mean, he was very much underrated.
He created space for himself.
Yeah. I can't believe he only actually played 49 games. It just seems to be.
Well, I say,
was he competing with? I seem to remember it was either going to be him or
Spanish Dave,
wasn't it? And they didn't often play both from the same time.
It was very. But then when they did, you saw what happened. They tore Blackpool a new one. So you know, it was either going to be him, or if he was going to be played out wide, then it would probably be more like Buckley who was going to play, or it would be Kaz. So
but that goal against Blackpool, I mean. That was
dreamy,
one of the best goals of the MX era, really.
Absolutely. But also, in that match, you know, as part of that showreel, is the number of assists he got as well. I mean, he scored one and another two, at least two or three assists.
Oh, yeah.
It was just fantastic, you know, and it was another one. It was like last week. It was actually just one of those bright, sunny days, and everything was going right for us. And like I say, even Dean Hammond was doing his best, as he pointed out there, because we scored all 7 that day. It was fabulous. But talking of things at the Amex, we've got the fella who kind of built it.
Yeah, now, Norman, you didn't build it single-handedly. Well, although you're probably trying to tell us you did.
No, he might have had a labourer sort of mixing the cement a bit in the bucket.
But when you go, I mean, it's the first time you've been back there for a while now, today. Yeah. When you go there, is there any bits of it you can look at and think, I did that?
Generally, what I did is all hidden because it was substructure work, all the foundations and the concrete in, and, you know, so generally everything out of the ground was done by other people. But it was always, all the everything that was concreted, I was in charge of it also, even, you know, the dog's head up in the scaffolding, balancing, you know, that's all hidden. You can't see it now. It's all the stands built around it, so it's
You say that you can still see bits of, if you know where you're looking, you can still see parts of the dog's head.
Trust me, he knows where he's looking.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I assume you're in the away end today.
Yeah, I'm in the
so
way
this
end,
is
yeah.
a new experience for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously, you know, and I think, as you said just before we came on air, you've only been there in the first season, so you haven't seen
I haven't seen the link
your folly completed. So what do you think you're going to be seeing?
Well, I've obviously seen it on TV what it's like, but it'd be interesting to witness the atmosphere myself, because I'm assuming it's going to be full or thereabouts today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sold out, yeah.
Sold out. So it's going to be interesting to sample the atmosphere, because it was a good atmosphere in my view when it was, you know, half built. It's going to be... Hopefully it won't be that much.
So let's rewind these 10 years, or whatever it was, so that since you started sort of doing that. And like I said, we were saying earlier that you're on North Stand Chat, and people would, you know, they'd come to you. You were the go-to person, to the point that actually the club ended up putting up this forum to say, no, we're going to tell you what's happening.
But then
there's a fellow who used to turn up with a stepladder and a camera.
Yeah, I had a call one day. I was sat in the office, and the guy on the gate, the security guy there, and he said, there's two guys out on the gate. He said, "When you know, one's got a camcorder, one's got a stepladder. they want to come and meet you." And so, well, out they go. And then the man sitting next to me was there with Graham, doing their weekly. He was just a monthly.
Jack Straw's Family Watch.
Monthly video.
He did a weekly.
Jack Straw's Family Watch,
And
I cannot believe that not only did he do it, but people actually bought the calendars he made.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Series of calendars.
Yeah.
So what was he after? Absolutely. He was just after internal sort of, you know, groundworking pictures.
Yeah, yeah. Graham was obviously to balance
on a step ladder over peek over the hoarding and take pictures from around, which, all right, you can from a distance, and you know it's not detailed, is it? So
well, there was the webcam there as well. It was showing parts of it, but I've never known, which is basically just stayed still. But
yeah, when it took the picture maybe half an hour or so,
the mass of excitement when something was actually happening, it was like oh, something's happening.
Blimey, this is 8 years ago and he's still excited. Were you still working on the project when the arches got delivered?
Yes.
Do you remember what happened then?
Well, the arches got delivered. They were put on the field for a long time, put together.
Yeah.
And then eventually they were hoisted up on one side. It was the east side, wasn't it?
Yeah. Did you have to wear brown trousers that day?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Well, it come down again. As quick as it went up, it come down again because of the design. It was designed obviously to link in the whole stadium in a ring.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. The temporary works, it wasn't designed for the loading, so it sort of gave way. So down it would come, and everything was a shush back, and I'm in a mad state of a panic over
the,
it all.
The measurements had to be right as well.
Oh, yeah, that's spot on, to the mill, to the millimetre.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that Graham's not here, but I think, wasn't there this kind of Keystone Cops chase?
He got down the road.
He got whispered it was in this sort of lorry park.
Well, I told him.
Go on.
I was coming down the A23, and I saw it on the lorry parked up at Hattop Van Cross Hill. And he whizzed up there and
with his camcorder.
So I didn't have my camera and everything with me, so I've pictures on the phone. But there was quite a lot of that stuff.
Do these videos still exist?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go onto YouTube and find Barry's back channel, you'll find all of them. Go back from when it was literally just a digger on an empty field. Right up until when it was finished. So there's some videos which I've never posted on there. The one which Norm got us into the ground when I stood on the centre spot and did a complete 360 of the whole thing, but there were just diggers and lorries all over the pitch, and that's still got a good
because one. Because Norman took myself and Alan on a hard hat tour around there.
I think it was something like the December or the January before it was due to open.
One,
it was absolutely freezing. Two, I just remember that the yellow Viz vest wouldn't fit round me properly. And three...
No one else was going to mention that word.
No. It's just I'm happy to mention it. And three, it was just how relatively incomplete it was. Mm. You know, they didn't even have the, I don't know what you call them, the steps in place that the seats were going to go on.
Yeah. Oh, they were there because we went to the top of the West End.
But that reminds me, have you seen pictures of Tottenham's ground now? How's that going to be? Ready?
Yeah, I know.
It'll all come together.
You say that, but if you considered the readiness or the apparent readiness in the January that we actually got our tour, you think there's no chance that we've got sort of 7 months to get this together. And it's obviously the last bits come together, bang, 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 very quickly.
I just like the signs on the doors. And you get Norman going, this is going to be the dope testing room. And it was just mad.
So how long did you work on the stadium for? Because you weren't just, there when it was completed, were
no,
you?
No, I didn't. I started just after it. They were doing the village way widening and I think the earthworks. So I got in there a few months after it started. And then, to be honest, at the end, my job was finished. Because I was substructure work.
Mm.
My job had finished, so bucking them in there, you know, they could have said bye-bye to me a long time before then, but it sort of kept me going, and then I had an opportunity to go back and work at home, from home. So, so I took it then. So I left. It was finishing. I think the pitch was getting laid, I think, and they were putting my last pictures were of the sprinkler pipes going in, I think.
Right.
Okay. Have you built any stadium since?
No. I'm back on boring housing and roads and.
All right. So are you looking for a stadium project now?
No,
Palace have got a new one to be built, haven't they?
I did get an offer to go and work on Cardiff's ground actually when they were extending that. And
you'd have just left a hidden message there, wouldn't you?
Couldn't understand why I didn't want to take him up on them. Offer, but
would you want to work at Smellhurst?
Well, there are some other links between Brighton and Swansea as well. So we're just going to look at. Some of those. Now, this is the first time we've played you in a home game since the 3rd of May 2008. Mm-hmm. What was significant about that game? Can you remember?
We won the championship.
And the trophy was handed to you with them.
That's right, yeah, because it was a Leeds that season, we actually won the championship weeks before, but they couldn't give us this trophy because Leeds were claiming the 15-point deduction. Oh, they
would
had.
Would you have been there that day, Norman, when they got the trophy?
I wasn't there on that game, and unfortunately for me, I got a pretty track record for watching Albion. I've never seen them lose. So
long may that continue.
Something might change the impact with that game.
Actually, we lost that Spurs game. So
actually, to be fair, what I remember about that game is that about probably a good half the crowd, the Albion crowd, stayed behind to show appreciation for Swansea. Yeah.
But in the Swansea side that day was Marcus Painter, as was Gary Monk actually. Your striker that day was Jason Scotland. Now he was around a bit. Whatever happened to him?
He where did he go?
God knows.
I mean, because I remember him being a decent player.
He was a good player.
Ipswich, wasn't it?
Sounds about right. Yeah, I seem to recall.
He ended up in Ipswich.
Right.
First of all, where did he go? I can't even remember where he was.
Oh, blimey!
He disappeared off the face of the earth. Anyway. But for a time, you know, when we were winning that League One. Jason Scotland was a fantastic player.
Yeah, I think he was the one that scored the winning goal that day, didn't he?
No, it was Fabian Brandy.
It was. Okay. Other links, Leon Knight.
Interesting.
Do you remember Leon Knight?
Leon Knight, yeah. I spent soccer AM with Leon Knight.
Yeah.
So would you have been pleased or disappointed when he left?
Leon Knight actually done well for us because he scored two goals in the playoff semi-final for us.
He scored a hat-trick on his debut.
But he was a bit of a loose cannon.
He certainly was.
And others include Brian Wade. Do you remember Brian Wade?
Brian Wade, yeah.
And Dean Saunders, of course.
Dean Saunders, yeah.
But one player that we signed from yourselves...
Ryan Harley?
Kemi Agustin.
All right.
Oh, dear. We got unloaded Tim, didn't we?
I'll tell you what, Swansea have really dumped on us, you know, once.
Orlandi, there's an Agustin.
There is. And didn't Terry Connor play for both clubs as well?
Yes, I believe he did. Yeah. But I mean, Agustin, he's had quite a career, really. I mean,
has he? No, he hasn't.
He played 39 times for Swansea. I didn't actually realise he actually had 8 games on loan at Palace. He came, only played 13 games for us in 2 years.
And he was offside 26 times.
To Vendisil, wherever they are. He had 2 games at my Hamilton Academicals. And then FC Dordrecht.
AD.
Global Sebru. And he's now currently SV Tech.
We don't care.
No.
None of us care about him.
He did have one good game for us.
No.
But looking at this, he's played...
Listen, I'm the last person to talk about this, but
he's played 7 games in the last 3 years.
He could be...
He
could be 3 yards behind the defenders and his gut would still be offside.
So that's it. That's all we've got time for this week. So just a quick reminder that it is the Reverbathon next week. If you do want to sponsor a co-line sponsor along with oldfootballshirts.com,
and we've also actually I will say as a heads up for those already, I've got to say Jerry Hussain of the very best of Brighton, we've got to say Dan Maskell of Maskell Financial Services, thank you very much indeed, and also Dave Costa from Flowers Unlimited, big shout out to you three, already been co-sponsors of the Albion show for the Albion Raw show for the Reverbathon. If you fancy being a co-sponsor of the show next week, please get in contact, or we might just contact you, if you do. But if not, if you can chuck a few quid Radio Reverb's way, then it will keep this brilliant radio station on air and your favourite Albion radio podcast, the longest running one, by the way, on air.
Yeah, so that's it. So thank you, of course, to Alan Wares. Thank you to Norman.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming back,
Norman. And to Nigel Summer.
Enjoy your weekend down here, Norm, but not too much.
Now, Carver's Carl Hull once said he put all the meat on the barbecue. Let's just hope he can't remember how I liked it. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Raw. See you next week. Bye.